Hello, and welcome to Sporecast, a Canadian podcast discussing patient-oriented research. Research done in partnership with patients. I'm Beverly Pomeroy.
And I'm Lisa Ridgway. And we are patient partners who sit on a variety of patient councils and advisory groups, all with the vision to encourage research to answer research questions that matter to patients and aim to improve healthcare.
Thank you for joining us today. We hope you will be inspired to get involved and create your own impact in order to support healthcare research be more relevant and meaningful. Please enjoy the show.
In a new home, and brought to you from home, Sporecast is back.
Well, welcome back to another amazing episode of Sporecast. Nice to see you today, Lisa.
Hey, Bev, it's nice to see you too. And I'm super excited about our guest today. It's long overdue to have Terry Fleming of Research Ethics BC on. But before we start, I just want to acknowledge and share the privilege that many of us have because we're located within the ancestral, traditional, and unceded territory of Indigenous peoples across BC. And since we're calling in from different parts of BC, and BC is home to almost 200 distinct First Nations and Métis chartered communities, and each of them have their own unique traditions and history. So it's good to be back with you, Bev.
Yeah, I'm very, as we always say, excited. So I'm really excited to welcome Terry Fleming. We did talk to Terry. She was part of one of our sound bites at Putting Patients First Conference in the fall. And Terry joined the BC Academic Health Science Network as the Director of Research Ethics BC, which is one of the platforms that Academic Health Science Network has, a kind of one of their drop down. And, you know, Terry was really sort of the one that was leading and successfully led the BC Ethics Harmonization Initiative as the chair of that advisory committee. So I'm sure we'll talk a little bit more about that. And Terry is on Vancouver Island, and that's kind of where she had a bit of her start over there, originally from Alberta. We're glad you're back here in BC and that you can be with us,
yes.
Terry. And, you know, Terry's an avid knitter. We might have to talk about that. Usually we talk about dogs, but I think Terry has a dog too, you know, in her life as well. So Terry, thank you so much for being with us today. We're super excited to talk about, you know, ethics here in BC and how it relates to patient-oriented research. So thank you for your time today.
Well, thank you very much. Thank you for having me today.
Oh, it's really our pleasure. And as I said, long overdue. So Terry, let's just start off with one of those sort of like general all-purpose questions, but it's a fun one. What is the best thing about your job right now?
Oh, that it's a fun one, but it's a tough one because I think there's a lot of elements that I'm really enjoying about my job right now. I get to work with some amazing people. And I think that's really important in my growth and my career, and also for the network that I represent. The people that I work with are amazing, and no 2 days are ever the same. So I'd actually say one of the best things right now is that I don't know what's going to happen tomorrow in my job, and I'm going to have something exciting. There will be something different up and for a challenge. But that does make it very interesting every time I wake up. There's nothing boring going on in research.
Wow, as if there isn't anything boring going on in the rest of the world. I don't know how you handle the excitement on both internally and externally. Bev, I think you better ask the next question.
Well, it's obviously ethics, you know, when you're a patient partner, you know, whether we know it or not, is an important component of the work of research here in BC in particular. And so I'm just wondering, like, you know, this is a bit of COVID speak that we're talking about these days. And I'm just wondering, you know, COVID has changed the world and changed the way that we're doing things. And how do you think it's impacted, you know, the research ethics process itself, you know, in the work that you're doing during COVID right now?
There's been a huge impact, actually. So when the pandemic was really started to get going in British Columbia and it was announced as a public health emergency, research ethics boards across the country, actually, but I'll just focus on BC, had to really dive deep into, what are the emergency procedures for research, and what are our commitments as research ethics boards and members and administrators in prioritizing, and how are we going to get this done in order to meet the need? Because obviously with a new virus, something that people hadn't seen before, research was fundamental. I'm sure you've heard that from a lot of other people. I don't need to harp on that one. But one of the main things is you're talking about humans, and you're talking about their data, their blood, their everything that's involving them personally. And so what do we do in research ethics? We have to make sure that we look after the participants in this research. So there were researchers that wanted to get things going really fast. And in order to bring novel treatments to people that would not necessarily have that treatment unless it was done under a study, for example. Yeah. That was something that was really important for us. And so from a research ethics perspective, we wanted to make sure that that would be available to patients no matter where they were in British Columbia, in which health authority they were in. So we developed the rapid ethical review process.
Wow.
And this was something that we kind of took our model that we already had for harmonized ethical review, which involves all of the partners to that research study being a part of the review, and the researcher only having to deal with one board, one review, one piece of response that they have to give. But what we did is we sped it up. So we set some timelines to it of the review had to be done within 5 working days by the research ethics board and back to the researcher with a response. But also what we did was we incorporated that we would do it as a review that immediately would include all of the health authorities on it, so that there wasn't a reason for when the researcher was ready to go to another health authority if they weren't starting there right now because there weren't any COVID patients for them to work with and they were going to do it later. They had already had ethical approval, and so that wasn't going to slow down the process.
Wow, that's extraordinary, Terry. Like, yes. There were so many things that just occurred so fast. And for something like ethics, that's so comprehensive and so involved, like that's pretty impressive. Hey, Lisa?
Yeah, I'm really impressed by that 5-day turnaround. You promised people coming through, it would be 5 days. Wow.
Well, for research ethics, that is only one part of the puzzle for getting approval to conduct research, but it was something they were really committed to doing. And some of the things that we had to balance to be able to do that were, first of all, I have to say, it really is about the professionalism of the people that are doing these reviews and the commitment to this process. I really just facilitated them gaining agreement to it. But they all were very committed to this process. And what we had to do was think about, is there the possibility that we're going to have burnout of our research ethics reviewers? You know, if you need a specialist on a research ethics review, such as a respirologist, which is very important in a COVID study, are we going to be burning them out by having them reviewing all these studies and reviewing them within 5 days? What are we going to do for backup? What if we don't have a respirologist for a study that's taking place in interior health first? So we also developed an ad hoc reviewers list. And so we did a call out to people across the province that were either current or former research ethics board members or clinicians with specific expertise that might be very helpful in this time. And we formed a list that any research ethics board in the province could contact us and say, we need a respirologist. Do you have a respirologist that's available for research ethics review next week? And so that was another element that we put in place very quickly in order to help address any need that came up.
Gosh, and you're so funny. You said, I just facilitated that. There's no just about that. Somebody had to be coordinating and collaborating, and I'm sure a lot of this was done with the collaboration or at least in parallel with the clinical trials and the BC support unit, you know, the whole organization, the whole AHSN sort of connecting and moving forward.
Well, we were very fortunate that our network from research ethics perspective, we are connected to 14 research ethics boards in the province as a part of our harmonized review. And we're connected to even more than that, that aren't part of the harmonized review, but they are part of our network for expertise and gaining knowledge and working together on best practice. And so our main thing was for us to be able to immediately connect to people that we've developed a trusting relationship with over the past 7 to 8 years. And these are the same professionals that I worked with when I was working as in research ethics when I was in Island Health, and just to be able to pick up the phone or send an email and say, we need to have a meeting like tomorrow. and we're going to work on this, and we're going to figure out, we're going to find an answer. And you've got 2 days to give me a response. That kind of stuff. And everybody was so responsive and very keen to be a part of it. So when I say I just facilitated, I really want to make sure everybody understands it wasn't me that did that created this or Research Ethics BC. This was the professionals that do research ethics in the province.
Oh, I'm just flabbergasted by the work that happened, the 5 day turnaround, the quick turnaround. Now, when you talk about trusted relationships, some of those people were patient partners, correct? Because you have patient partners on your advisory group. Can you tell us a little bit about the role of the patient partners?
Yes, absolutely. I was very privileged again to, when I was working with Island Health and Research Ethics, the Health Research Ethics Board there wanted to make a commitment to having patient partners as a part of their Research Ethics Board. This was 2 years ago now, as full-on members of the board, as not in a community member capacity, which is something that's required under the Tri-Council policy statement, but an actual category for patient partners being members of the board. And so they started it off, in my opinion. I think other boards probably are doing this in another way and that I just am not familiar with, or they haven't let me know. They may do after this video. They may all put their hands up and do the same thing, which would be great. But up until, you know, that point, I hadn't really seen that happening. And so when COVID-19 started to happen, I know that you've heard from Sterling and Danielle and about the importance of patient partners in a lot of the governance structures and decision-making bodies and helping them through this process, giving perspective. But we've also seen this happening within research ethics. And I have a couple of examples that can't come top of head. Right away, we had one researcher that contacted me and wanted a little bit of ethical consult on the design of their project. This is a COVID-19. It was going in very fast. It needed to be done very quickly. And there was, you know, a question in there in my mind about a particular recruitment method they were going to use. And I thought to myself, 2 years ago, I would have probably referred him to an REB or a Research Ethics Board chair and say, well, they might be able to give you some help on this with their expertise. But I thought, no, I need to refer him to a patient partner.
Yay!
I hooked him up with one of our patient partners that works with us on the advisory council within Research Ethics BC, and did it within a day. And they had a very good meeting, as far as I know, and it helped influence the design of that study by him having that chat. And we also were consulted. A colleague of mine asked me from another institution, can you help me find a patient partner very quickly that can help us with a task force they were developing about how they were going to start research up again within their institution. And so I'm starting to see even more people wanting to connect with patient partners when it comes to these types of, you know, quick consults about a research study or in a pandemic, or, you know, helping us develop the process for how we're going to move forward.
So. Wow. I mean, obviously Lisa and I being patient partners, we really like to hear that. And even for myself, learning about patient-oriented research, you know, and ethics, it is a bit of a learning curve, right? Like I didn't know a lot about ethics and where would I fit as a patient partner in that. So it's great when we do have leadership or people involved that can, like yourself, that can kind of see a crack. Oh, you know what? This would be a great opportunity. Cause I think that's where our culture will change in research, you know, and I think it is changing and it sounds like it from your perspective as well. So I'm just wondering, like, you know, if you're talking about COVID and we talk about you being a leader, you know, of, you know, this, an operational unit of Academic Health Science Network. And I'm just wondering if you have a story about your own personal situation amid COVID. I think one thing that COVID has done is really kind of humanized all of us, you know, very much. We're starting to get to know each other on a human level, not just a professional level, you know, within our organizations. And I'm just wondering, like, have you had a personal situation within your leadership, you know, about the, where the impact of COVID or the COVID-19 has impacted sort of, you know, your role or that day for you?
I've been very fortunate that COVID-19 hasn't affected anybody in my family. And I'm grateful for that. And I'm also grateful that amid COVID-19, when everybody was sent to work from home, that I already worked from home a great deal. So it wasn't a big culture change for me, which was, I was very fortunate in that. But what I'm grateful for is that my children have grown up and left home, and that I don't have them in the home or I'm responsible for their education while also doing a full-time job that is under a lot of pressure due to a pandemic. And I see that in my colleagues, and I think that what I've seen is during COVID-19, it's made us a lot more visible. And in particular, research ethics is very visible and very visible to each other. I think it's raised us up a little bit, and people can see us a little bit more because of the contact is much more possible now. Everybody can see us on Zoom, and we can see each other. But it also makes us vulnerable, and we have to be comfortable with that vulnerability. And there's been times when I've been very vulnerable in meetings and feeling a little bit emotional. And you know what? It's all good, because
it is.
It's all good, because my colleagues, then we all see each other as humans. We see each other as mothers, as, you know, parents. And we see ourselves as, you know, partners and good decorators, bad decorators, you know, fantastic with our pets, or really neglecting them when people are watching you and ordering them out of the room. And I don't even want to talk about the amount of times I've seen people scream at their kids, and it's made me laugh because I'm working now and I don't have to do that.
So, but I think you and Bev have tapped into a really cool piece. I'm just going to follow this thread about the legacy of the pandemic. Like in, I want to try and think past or post pandemic. And I want to say that maybe this is the legacy piece for some of it coming out. This, the connectiveness, sort of the old ways of seeing people, but with a sort of a transformational, quality. We're passing through a really gray zone and, hopefully coming out into the light. So I think, you know, staying the course, the whole legacy piece. Can you talk a little bit about like the vision, the longer term vision you have for Research Ethics BC?
So I have a few things that I see for us in the future, and some of them have not changed from before COVID, but some have been affected by COVID. And I think one thing that's really important for Research Ethics BC is that I think we need to really be moving towards a central platform for the conduct of research ethics, the actual review process for the entire province, and not have separate platforms by each institution, and everybody investing money in these, in new or upgrades, or, you know, when there's a big one that's already available and we can make use of for everybody. And so I'd like to see that happen. And I think that it would be very valuable in any time, never mind being in a pandemic. We're very fortunate that during the pandemic, we've been able to make use of the harmonized process, which is already within RISE, hosted by UBC, which makes it easier for us because that is one platform. But there are outliers, and it would be helpful if everybody was able to use the same platform. The other big vision I have for us is being able to stand there arm in arm with colleagues from First Nations communities and First Nations Health Authority, Métis Nation, and to be able to stand there and say, we have worked together to develop an Indigenous research ethics system, program, whatever it looks like, some way for us to make sure that when research is involving Indigenous populations and communities, that there is a clear process for making sure that the ethical considerations have been put in, have been considered. And I want to be a part of that, and I want Research Ethics BC to be a part of that. We've had, we have somebody seconded with us from the First Nations Health Authority to help us move this forward. But it's been on the agenda at all the institutions for quite some time. Like, how do we move this forward so that there is a way for researchers to know what their responsibilities are? And also for Indigenous populations to actually be the decision-making body.
Yes.
About what is ethical within our nation or population. Mm-hmm. So that's another big vision I have for us. The being nimble part, I like
yes.
Us being nimble. The fact that we were able to, you know, through our network, collect the information and start off the actual inventory of research that's being done in the province. And I prepared a little bit for this interview by digging into the inventory because I kind of manage it in the background. And I can tell you that in 4 months, there's been 237 studies reviewed by Research Ethics that are just about COVID-19.
In 237.
Whoa. And that's probably not all of them. We probably are missing a few from some of our colleges and other smaller universities that we haven't managed to tap into yet, but we are hoping to gain that information. So anybody watching this, if you know of a research study that isn't in our inventory from BCHSN, you should probably list it because this inventory is very valuable and is going to help decision makers know where the gaps are, what needs to actually be a research question.
Wow.
Yeah, I just think what a great interview. I just kind of want to keep talking to you. I just love that, you know, right now what we're seeing is this sort of surge in equity, diversity and inclusion and you know, including the obviously part of that is a big part of that is our Indigenous community. So it's nice to see that in ethics, you know, and that is a priority because it just to me seems to make sense. And I know we all think that, but we know sometimes we're pushing up against a rock that, you know, to try and really sort of express that. And I'm really, really thrilled, Terry, that you shared that. And that's going to be one of the priorities, you know, moving forward. And in being nimble, I have no doubt that Research Ethics BC is going to be one of those organizations that definitely pushes that forward. So, you know, any last thoughts before we sign off or any questions you want to ask us? Lisa always asks our guests what they want to ask us, but you don't have to ask us anything. But, you know, so any last thoughts before we sort of sign off for today?
I was thinking about this and I was thinking, have either of you ever had the pleasure of being involved in an ethical review of a research study?
No. But I know you have like Jim Mann and Sunny Liu on your research advisory board, Uber superstar patient partners. Yep. So I've heard from Sunny, it's incredible.
Yeah, they're both very engaged. And but I mean, it is something that if a research ethics board ever approaches you and says, you know, we would like to have a patient partner working with us, even if it's only on one study, because they want your perspective on. Does the consent form really need to be this complicated and 8 pages long? That kind of question. Take them up on it because it's an incredible experience to be part of.
I'm totally going to go to like my local health authority now that I live and work in and go and ask.
Me too.
Do you have patient partners as members of your ethics board? So thanks, Terry, for that.
Yes, great, great question.
Yeah.
Oh, well, you know, Terry, thank you so much for spending time with us. You know, normally we invite our guests for Timmy's afterwards, but I know you're a big camper. So at some point we're going to sit around a campfire and we're going to toast a marshmallow together, all of us with our dogs. Probably feed the marshmallow to the dogs. But anyways, we really appreciate you coming on Sporecast. Thank you so much for your time today.
Thank you very much for inviting me. It's been easier than I thought it was going to be. Thank you.
Sporecast is now Zoomed to you, courtesy of hosts and creators Bev Pomeroy and Lisa Ridgway. With the able assistance of a small but mighty team of production partners at the BC Support Unit, powered by Communications Lead, Justin Otteson, Project Manager, Michelle Duffy, and me, Sporecast's technical producer and occasional announcer, I'm Kent Cadigan-Lofsgaard.
If you'd like to get in touch with us and learn more, you can follow us on Twitter and Instagram at @spore_cast. That's spore, S-P-O-R, _cast, C-A-S-T, #sporecast. We can also be reached via email at sporecast1@gmail.com or visit our website, www.sporecast.ca.
If you're listening to this episode, you can now also watch and subscribe for more Sporecast episodes featured on the BC Support Unit's YouTube channel, the BC Support Unit, and the Academic Health Science Network, our provincial partners in Canada's strategy for patient-oriented research.